is dealing with old visual culture, painting,
right.
Book stuff, the Shakespeare plays.
Right.
Just, okay, but
Frank was certainly a playwright as well.
Right, but because he was dealing, he was the chief focal point in the newest, greatest art form, rock music,
right.
Amplified music.
Right.
You know, these other playwrights, they couldn't do that. But he could take that thing, because that actually, rock music was the iconography and the drama in the global theater anyways. It already was a theater.
And Frank became Frank back in the 60s became an icon.
Right, and a devil.
Because that's a part of the game plan.
That's right. He was considered a devil by the right wing and all this stuff.
Oh, always. To this day, he's considered the devil.
Right, so you see that. This play is a play, this Giuffa is about himself and his process of taking the latest technology, and if given the opportunity, he would have done this, and he already was doing it on a small scale in his thinking.
Sure.
And what he was trying to say in his lyrics and conceptual stuff in his books.
He's been doing it at least up until the time he died. So far, he had put in 30 years.
Yes. Yeah. 63.
Yeah.
To 93.
He had put together a good 30 years. I was with him almost 20 years of that. Okay,
right.
So Okay, now see, I'm seeing, as we're talking, little bits and pieces.
Yes, that's what I want.
Are falling in there. Oh my God! And I was there.
Yes,
okay.
That's why
as
this
a
is
part, as a part of this. Okay.
Okay, so then you have Francesco Zappa. According to the dictionary, 1763 to 1788, the same period of recording.
Yeah.
Exactly, same years.
Because he called me and told me he found Francesco, you know, just in his reading.
Well, Gail, he says Gail found it.
She found the reference to him,
right.
And then Gail, and then Frank, of course, dove right into it. Got all the history, got all the who his sponsors were, what time frame, what kind of music. He had Gail get the charts, had to find the search for the charts and stuff like that. Yeah, I was up at the house. During that whole thing, and you know, he showed me the charts. And he showed me Francesco's history, just the whole shot.
I was there.
I was
all right,
there.
It's good. Now the year 1990 for this, you know, this is Frank just coming up with another great show. This should be Dynamite Show, Barry, for him launching his presidential campaign.
Right.
This would be his political commercial.
Right.
He says on Freako, one particular song is a body commercial to get more groupies or something, one of the songs in the liner notes. But you see, the whole process of what he was all about, he was the only artist, creator, thinking like the CIA, like marketing, like advertising, like the industry, like great works of aesthetic appeal, you know, his own composition. The whole mixed bag, he's the only one thinking on that huge scale.
Right, that's what I mean.
That's why he's the best artist.
Right, that in terms of his long-term approach, and that's in terms of his long-term thinking approach and planning, because that's the key. Those are the long-term planning.
Yes, and remember in the circular for the Warner exec, hey snazzy exec, something 1971, where he lays out the conceptual continuity of the band and why he's not a normal band, and he talks about the long range plans, and he talks about a town, and everything's orchestrated in the town, and then there's these little pins that are out in the Atlantic Ocean, there's millions of them, and there's one little pin that has a gesture from a studio in it. Do you remember that whole scenario? I could actually go read it, but it's quite well known among the Zappa files. This scenario of planning and sculpting. He talks about sculpting Earth environments and all kinds of things. That was in 1970.
Really?
Oh, if you haven't, let me go down and bring that up. I mean, it's an incredible, but it's the long-term plan that you're talking about.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's him. Because we would sit and talk, and he would, let me think here. Because we would think about this in terms of planetary sculpting. We were in Germany one night, and it was like past show, after the show and stuff, and he goes, you know, this part of Germany, He goes, you're a historian, you're into geology and stuff. And he was saying, well, did you know that Germany, what we know as Germany, this actually used to be Sweden?
Yeah. Who's he saying this to, a journalist?
Me.
Oh. Yeah, that's right.
Me.
Yeah.
He goes, yeah, this was actually Sweden. You know, when European society was up and running and stuff like that, because they've always been fighting back and forth and various wars and things like that, and kingdoms and who's in charge here and there over the years, that at one point in time, this was Sweden. Until the Germans, the Vandals, the whatever at the time, finally drove them northward to where they are now. And, you know, basically it all boils down to, well, the bottom line is that that's a part of that political and geopolitical in sculpture.
Yes.
You know, when you look on the map, you'll see the boundary lines are drawn up a certain way. But of course, you know, there aren't lines on the actual ground. But this, you know, this used to be Sweden. That used to be Russia. This and that, because I'm totally into that thing. I'm a map reader. I love maps. I've always loved geology and geography.
Well, yeah, that's why there's so many animosities in Europe.
Right, of course.
You take the country of Prussia with Bismarck. That's not there anymore. But it was a big country in the 19th century.
Exactly. But this is what I'm saying. Frank knew that about me.
Okay.
He knew that about me, see, because, you know, because I'm the only one in the band who always had a book in my hand.
Right.
You know, I'm always reading, I'm always, you know, and we would discuss, see, that's the thing, I could discuss anything with Frank. We would talk geology, we would talk geography, and science, and politics, and music, and religion. But the thing is, whenever we have our conversations, it was all part of the same ball of wax.
Yeah, you were the Pauline Butcher of the mothers. He liked literate people. He liked people who read and could think. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what we would talk about. That's why he kept me there. You know what I mean? That's why, you know, things like Joe and Thingfish and Hunch and Toot and all that stuff were evolving. And he'd go, Ike, here, have a seat. This is what I'm thinking. You know, how would you like to be? Okay, look, I've got this character. Okay, or actually, no, he would just actually he wouldn't say I've got this character. He'd just bring in sheets of paper,
right?
And then I'd be the person doing it. You know, he's like, here,
you rehearse it.
We just start rehearsing it. We just start performing it, and then okay, here's when we get to this part, stop here, and then we develop the music around it, and then keep going. You know?
All right.
And then it would end up being Joe or Thingfish or Hunch and Toot.
That's right.
Or whatever. Yeah.
See, literate people have ideas. He would need to bounce. He's got ideas automatically, but he needs someone else who could respond or had ideas of her own. To say to him that he could bounce off of. So here's
that would be me.
That's right. So listen to this. This is a Warner promo circular from 1971, and it's called "In Case You've Never Heard of Our Group." So it's a letter to the Warner executives. Hey, promote us a little more. So I won't do the introduction part, but he has the executive asking questions. What's so special about this group? And Frank says, perhaps the most unique aspect of the mother's work is the conceptual continuity of the group's. Now, this is italicized. Output macrostructure. See, that's your long-range thinking. Output macrostructure.
Right.
And he says, there is and always has been a conscious control of thematic and structural elements flowing through each album, live performance, and interview. See, tactility is not just making albums. It's not just live performance. It's the talking. It's the ads. The whole thing is what he's worth. He's an artist of all media. In all categories. So then he says to the guy, in about 1970, earthworks were starting to become known. So he says, do you know about earthworks, says Frank? Imagine the decades and the pile of stuff on them subjected to extensive long-range conceptual landscape modification. There's your geology.
Yes.
He says houses, offices, people live there and work there.
Right.
They even make movies there. Imagine that
right.
you could be living there and working there and not even know it. He's talking about the invisible
right.
environment of the global theater.
Right. Exactly, exactly.
And he says, whether you can imagine or not, that's what my deal is. That's what the deal is. So he said, this is what's special about our group. This is the way we're thinking. So the executive responds, Frank, you know, makes this up, and he has the executive saying, listen, nobody puts together a pop group, simultaneously planning years of absurdly complicated events, lives out those events, then writes about it in a press kit and expects somebody to believe it. You're nuts.
Right.
That's the response.
Wow.
So
wow.
Frank says, he just continues explaining. He says, the basic blueprints were executed in 1962 to 63. Preliminary experimentation in early and mid-1964. So he's speaking as Uncle Meat molding the room in the Jets, which is the early mothers, right?
Right.
It's
right.
autobiographical. Construction of the project object began in late 1964. Work is still in progress.
Right.
This is 6 years later, 7 years later. And then the guy says, the executive says, no wonder you guys never had a hit signal.
Right.
And then Frank says, I'm sure you realize that total control is neither possible nor desirable. It takes the fun out of it. The project object contains plans and non-plans, always the dialectic, but the dialectic is the content of the tactile molding, of the sculpting, because the tactile molder is a non-entity. It's a mind manipulating anything that's going on, recording whatever's going on. Do you see what I mean? It's plans
yeah.
and non-plans, allowing unforeseen things to happen. So the project object, as project slash object, contains
yeah, yeah,
plans.
Yeah, of course.
Plans in the, oh yeah, you were called that. This is your baby, right?
That's
the project
right.
object contains plans and non-plans. Also precisely calculated event structures, so that's like a world
right, right,
structure,
right.
Designed to accommodate the mechanics of fate and all bonus statistical improbabilities attended thereto.
Exactly, exactly. So he left enough room to accommodate
anything, anywhere, anytime that happens.
For no reason at all.
For
exactly.
no reason at all.
Any kind of stimulus, any kind of political, religious, musical, technological,
spiritual,
right?
religious,
spiritual right. upheavals or non-heavals.
Right.
And whatever stimuli that just happens to come along at the time, the concept, the project object can assimilate.
Incorporate. The brain, organizing whatever
right.
happens. Remember in 200 Motels, there was a disaster in Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the point is, he is not an, this is why, he has Ringo Starr playing him, or the other
right.
people. There's no Frank Zappa here. It's
no,
the
no,
hand.
No, no, no.
It's all, the hand.
All of it's Frank, right.
And remember
right.
in Zamoras, when Moon comes up, the daughter comes up and speaks to her father, the father is not identified. There's some
no,
things,
it's,
but it's the invisible tactile modulator, satellite conductor. You see?
It's the potholder glove.
Yeah. It's almost, did you say claws? Potholder.
No.
The potholder glove. The glove.
The glove.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the extension of the hand, the green glove.
The mitten on the cover of Them or Us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
See, and that's the one he highlights. That's the sense he highlights, his hand.
Yeah.
Because that's the tactile sense. I mean, the hand is the closest to what the brain does in organizing
yeah.
and manipulating.
Exactly.
And,
oh, definitely.
Right. So then the guy, after he says, the mechanics of fate, there's inevitable stuff coming, but also weird improbabilities that come out of it in the middle. So they're a
sure.
mixture of determined and non-determined from a third position.
Exactly.
Right? An invisible position.
Right.
It's almost like Frank. When I did a dialogue with Tommy Myers, I said it was like working with a general, and he says exactly. It's almost like
yeah.
Frank included. He being he was a conspiracy within the band. Nobody,
of
he's
course.
Like Charlie's Angel. Nobody knows who Charlie is. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
All right. So, he says, so the executive, when he hears that sentence, he goes, yeah, sure. I'm supposed to sell records for you guys, and I'm a little pressed for time, so why don't you just tell me normal stuff? Like, what your group sounds like, maybe? So Frank says, what we sound like is more than what we sound like. There it is right there. See, it's not the sound. It's the invisible, inaudible, tactile interplay of everything.
Right.
What we sound like...
What we sound like is the result of what we start sounding like.
Yeah.
What you think we sound like, we actually the result of our effect on the outside stimuli.
And response to our predetermined plans and non-plans
exactly,
that organized 8 years ago.
Exactly.
So in other words,
we are actually a result.
Yes.
And which changes on a nightly basis.
That's right.
Of what went before.
He says he's a journalist. I'm studying the effects of the news events. He does a lot in my dialogue with him where he explains how he watches all the different stations, gets different points of view of what's going on. You know, always invisibly orchestrating and creating a new pattern. So he says, what we sound like is more than what we sound. I'll do that again. What we sound like, it says that. It got the wrong letter. But what we sound like is more than what we sound like. We are part. It's what you were just saying. We are part and extension of the project object. We are not the only, the whole thing. We're just part of it. The project object, maybe you like event/organism better, incorporates any available visual medium, consciousness of all participants, including audience. It's almost like ESP, conscious of all participants, or at least knowing their cliche responses. So he's including the tactile response of the audience. All perceptual deficiencies. Look at that. He's including perceptual deficiencies, not perceptual excellencies, deficiencies.
Right.
And then he has the second last thing is God in brackets is energy. So he's including God. He's consuming God. And then he has bigger than God, the big note. And he says that's the universal basic building material. And then he goes, and other things. After saying all these big things, he just said other things.
And other things.
And we make a special art in an environment hostile to dreamers. So then the guy says, I still don't get it. Art? What art? Rolling Stone magazine and all other groovy important publications have convinced me that you guys are nothing more than a bunch of tone-deaf perverts. He almost predicted the perceptual deficiency.
Sure.
Tone-deaf perverts faking it on the fringe of the real rock and roll world. All you guys do is play comedy music. So I should believe this crap about a conceptual program spanning decades? Frank says, yeah. He just, Frank quietly says, yes. and then the executive says, you've been doing this stuff for 7 years? And then Frank says, almost 10 years if you include pre-planning.
Wow.
Pre-planning. That would be the accidental meeting of people like Don Preston and the luck of meeting Tim Carey, and in retrospect realizing how he can use all that stuff. He didn't plan on meeting Tim Carey, but then he gets involved with the World's Greatest Sinner, and that becomes a basic metaphor for what he wants to develop. You see?
Right.
It includes pre-planning. So then the guy says, so why didn't I ever know about any of this stuff? I'm aware and intelligent and everything. How come you never mentioned it? And Frank says, there are several possible reasons. One, maybe you never asked because you never heard any of the albums, so perhaps the long-range continuity would not occur to you. Or two, maybe you never asked because you never saw the Mothers perform live, and the conceptual aspects of this phase, many phases to come, could not be described without you having seen many concerts. Or three, maybe you never read any interviews where this phenomenon was briefly described, producing varying degrees of semantic confusion in his interviews.
Wow.
Or four, maybe now is when you should know. There's Frank bringing him into the plan. All right, you should know now, not before. It's a need-to-know basis. So he's talking like a CIA guy here. Maybe now is when you should know. So then the guy says, what is it, like a plot or something? Not exactly. Like a conspiracy. He goes, not exactly. What I'm trying to describe is the type of attention given to each lyric, melody, arrangement, improvisation, the sequence of these elements in an album, the cover art, which is an extension of the musical material, the choice of what is recorded, released, and or performed during a concert, the continuity or contrast of material, album to album, etc., etc., etc. All of these detail aspects are part of the big structure, or the main body of work. It's all capitalized.
Right.
Main body of work. The smaller details comprise not only the contents of the main body of work, but because of the chronology of execution, give it a shape in an abstract sense. See, that's what tactility sculpts. It sculpts the data into an abstract shape, which you perceive as consciousness.
Right.
So the guy says, so you say you're aware of the overall shape of the group's output so far? He says, I say we're not only aware of it, we control it.
Right.
It is an intentional.
Precisely.
Yeah, it is an intentional design. And then, then the guy says, you think this makes the mothers better than some other group? Frank says, it makes the mothers different, certainly. We do not claim that control of conceptual continuity automatically ensures superiority on any level.
Right.
The guy goes, what? Then Frank says,
Exactly. What? Exactly.
Yeah, so Frank says, this is a silly analogy, however, here goes. He says, imagine the head of a pin. On the head of this pin is an amazingly detailed illustration of some sort. It might be a little thought or a feeling or perhaps an obscure symbol. It might just be a picture of a sky or something with birds in it. But it's on the head of this pin, remember, and it's infinitely detailed. Now imagine this pin is not a pin. It's a musical note with a corresponding physical action, like the secret raising of an eyebrow to add special emphasis. Even in a recording studio where nobody can see you. That's where this is happening. It's invisible. Now, imagine enough of these abstract pins.
It's invisible because it's on the head of this pin.
Right, but it's also happening.
You can't see the head of a pin because it's pretty much almost on a molecular level.
Right, but the pin is a musical note with a corresponding physical action, but you can't see the physical action that goes with the note, which is the pin.
That's what I'm saying, because that takes place on a subatomic level.
Yes, that's Mu Meson's, which he has in Uncle Meat and all the subatomic metaphors he puts in there. Toads of the Short Forest, and I think he told Simon Prentice that Toads of the Short Forest refers to isotopes.
Wow.
And Simon was thrown with this. What the hell? But when you understand he's operating at all levels as a scientist, a comedian, as a physicist, the whole thing. He's doing everything, all knowledge.
Because he's the son of a physicist, after all.
Yeah.
And so he's a nuclear physicist, after all.
And it's a movie based on what? People who aren't normal?
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And it's fun. Just to review what he did is so much fun because you can, in dialogue, you get to hear it. You get to resonate with it. So he says, here's the important point. The gesture that accompanies the note, which is the tiny pin, is in the recording studio where nobody can see you. See, there's more invisible, inaudible tactility.
Sure. But you have to keep going further into.
Yeah.
In other words, you break out your electron microscope because you have to keep going further into and back.
And the illusion of that. Frank is satirizing all that whole scientific search.
Oh, of course.
You know, there's a great in Zap Comics by R. Crumb in the first couple of issues. It came out in the collective thing called Head Comics in the late 60s, where this scientist is looking through his microscope and he sees it. He finds the basis of life and everything, and he starts running around. I found it. And then the comic ends with a bunch of men in white suits carting him off to the mental hospital.
Of course, yeah, I remember that.
Right. Now I bring that up because in August 69, Zappa was interviewed by the LA Free Press, and Art Kunkelin, I think his name was, his first question, he says, I see you kind of like Zap Comics. And he goes, exactly, I'd agree with that. So there's the comic stuff, there's the Zap, there's these metaphors that Crumb was coming up. Zap is incorporating that and developed them into a larger. See, Frank was the manager of the whole scene. He was the one who like the CEO who had the big picture, right? Okay, you guys, everybody does this stuff, and he gets looks, surveys everything, all the arts. You know, Pauline Oliveri checking out everything. Her piece that he uses, talks about it in my interview, is really important. The upper and below, invisible, inaudible, up and below audible, comes together in a middle zone where this mash is, but we don't see the inaudible. And when the inaudible above or below cross vibrates into the middle mash, that could be a UFO or some psychic phenomenon.
Sure, it translates. Now we're talking about a subatomic and interdimensional.
Yes.
It translates into our reality, thereby becoming visible for X amount of seconds or minutes of time as it traverses from inaudible to up audible, translating vibrationally through our particular mashup in the middle.
And frequencies, right. And that is, he's got it down better than Philip K. Dick did. in all his novels. Okay, so so in this recording, sir, where nobody can see you, is this pin. He says, now imagine enough of these abstracted pins with the needle part chopped off to save space, though it's just the little head, right? It's even tinier.
Wow.
To fill an area as large as the North American continent and most of Central Europe, piled to a depth of 80 feet.
Wow.
80 feet over thousands of square miles with these little tiny pinheads. Now, that's like an ice age image of snow all over the planet or something, right?
Sure.
So he's saying, now imagine this. He's telling the absurdity. He's telling the executive about what his group's about, and he's trying to get him to imagine this huge layer, 80 feet deep. He says, now, imagine this area is not geometric space. That means visual Euclidean space. It's not limited to the literary space. It's tactile spaces. He says, imagine now look at this. What is the space made up of? A collection of decades. It's time.
Wow.
It's what are decades? That would be media content. You know what I mean?
It's just, In other words,
an archive.
An archive. Okay.
His vault.
Yeah.
Imagine it's a collection of decades. This space, and he says in brackets, the exact number to be disclosed eventually. In other words,
wow.
He's still working on it, or he knows the exact number of decades.
Eventually.
Right. And so then in the interview, he writes the word pause. He says, pause. So he's saying to the guy reading it, pause. And then he says, the reason for explaining this process is to simply let you know it exists and to give you, as an executive, some criteria by which to rationally judge what we do. It is not fair to our group to review detailed aspects of our work without considering the placement of a detail in the larger structure or the long-range thinking. And then the guy says, why don't you guys just play rock and roll like everybody else and forget all this other crap? And he says, sometimes we do play rock and roll like everybody else. And then he puts in brackets, sort of. Our basic stylistic determination is rock. Only sometimes it gets extrapolated into curious realms, which is every other thing we've been talking about.
I remember the phrase curious realms.
Yes. Okay. You see?
I remember that phrase very well.
Well, he would say it occasionally to you mean?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, he would say, yes, he would.
And see, this would... And this is the curious realms are the satellite conductors, tactile-wise, modulating all these realms. You know, that it's not just sound. It's not just rock.
Right, exactly. Because as long as I was with them, I'd never considered us a rock band.
Right.
I never considered us a rock band because there was way too much stuff going on.
Yeah, you guys were an orchestra.
I was doing, I'm just speaking from... Just me, myself?
Yeah.
I was doing way many things to be in just a rock band. I was doing a whole bunch. He had me doing so many different things. Nah, that wasn't...
You were a playwright. You were an actor in a theatrical performance.
I was an actor and an author as well, because Frank basically pushed me to help develop what... He had initially, ostensibly, had me go up and perform.
Well, that's tactility. That his group members had attacked our relationship to him. He'd take their... Remember, some of them would complain. The early mothers, he ripped us off.
They'd say, Frank would steal... He'll steal anything.
But it was a tactile interplay with you and his mind and your mind and all that and your talents.
Well, that's the thing. And because essentially my job would be to take this little sheet of scrap paper... And basically, initially, it would be all right. There'd be a couple of verses or a couple stanzas, okay. And then he would hand it to me and give me my initial chords, a couple of single note lines.
You would write that down.
And a chorus. Well, no, I mean he would write down a couple of two verses.
Right.
You know, four lines here, four lines there, with a chorus, maybe. Maybe a chorus.
Right.
Sometimes the chorus hadn't existed yet, but he would hand me so far what we're thinking. Okay, that's like Joe's Garage. That's how Catholic Girl.
Right.
That's how most of the songs that you ended up hearing me singing, starting with Joe's Garage. Now, he would hand me that and say, okay, sing this and this. Sing this line first, then let the music go by or the next part, or stop there, and then come back in with the second line over here when we get to this point, okay?
Yeah.
And then he'd say, in the middle, and there's, well, when we get there, just either hold off there or, see, I have this habit of, I would like hum or do like a verbal or verbal phrase, or just singing along to myself, or along with the music, because it sounded so great, and it was so new, and he'd go, keep that. I like that. Sell that tune.
Sell okay. that tune. Now, in other words, yeah. Isn't that like Roland Kirk, one of those guys, you know, grunting and humming? That's what you
yeah,
do?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Or Errol Garner.
Yeah.
Or you know. And basically, like, outside now, essentially, I created the whole melody. Okay.
Yeah.
Basically, he just gave me the words.
Right.
He says, make, do the melody, whatever, it's in this key, okay, and it's in this time signature. But here's a few words to work with. Here's like about four chunks of these executives fooled the fuck out of me, and it's been a long time to go, you know, blah blah blah, and then after that. Basically, he gave me those, but he says, well, there is no melody. You do it. Okay?
Right.
You do the melody. Sell that tune. So that became our operating, whenever it was time to record an album, basically that, sell that tune became my operational instruction.
Okay, let me interject here. Remember at the beginning of the deal for Opera, he says, it starts off with a few ingredients or a few things.
Right.
That's what he did, the same
right.
thing with
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. A few ingredients.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
then that's all it takes. That's all it takes. Because then interaction begins to occur from there based on each individual member's interpretation, based on those few ingredients at the beginning. Which really now, thinking about it, it's really, even the beginning isn't the beginning. It's just picking up at a certain place in, as a result of, in terms of tactility.
Yes.
Oh, I see. It's picking up at a certain place coming from,
the proportions that whatever's going on in that day determines the proportions
day.
And the context.
That'll change the next day. That day, at that time, in that particular decade, at that particular
right.
year.
Now listen.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Yeah. Now, what does it sound like? This is the way a guerrilla group or a terrorist cell would do it.
Of course.
You know? So, Frank, now here's the metaphor. He knows that the real control is not the Vietnam War or whatever's going on to bomb some
oh,
third
God,
world
no.
country. The control
no,
is
God,
right
no.
in the pop culture. And that
right.
Elvis is a guerrilla group, or any new band, the British Invasion. That's where the warfare, the software warfare is going on, and he knows it's a war, and he's treating his band as
right.
a war unit. Nobody else did that. And then satirizing the process as he did it.
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
That great opening scene, I think it's the opening scene in 200 Battalions, where Bekele comes out, a military guy, with his
right.
steaming briefcase, and he's going to give instructions to the Frank Zappa, Ringo Starr character. Well, why? That's like the military guy telling you guys about the AIDS virus. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
So, let me just finish up the point here. So he says, the rock gets extrapolated into curious realms. And then
right.
the guy, executive, says, you probably get into that classical rock, real intellectual, with ugly chords and the beat's no good.
Right.
Frank says, any association we might have with, quote, serious music, unquote, has to be considered from a rock viewpoint, because most of
right.
us are strictly rock musicians. There is also the element of humor to consider. So then
right.
the guy, his last comment is, you guys could never really play any good rock and roll. You're not serious enough. You couldn't even play any good serious music because you're not serious enough. Have you even considered employment? Have you even considered employment in another field?
right.
So Frank responds soberly, like he is the head of the CIA, kind of just responding to this idiotic person. I would like to bring to your attention at this time one of the basic tenets of our group philosophy. Then he has in capital letters. It is, in spite of all evidence to the contrary, theoretically possible to be heavy in quotes, and still have a sense of humor. That's all capitalized.
Right.
We direct this specifically toward people who suffer feelings of ambivalence when given an opportunity to laugh at themselves.
Right.
And another precept which guides our work. Somebody in that audience out there knows what we're doing, and that person
right.
is getting off on it beyond his or her wildest comprehensions, wildest
exactly.
understandings, beyond that, beyond the wildest
exactly.
understanding.
Exactly.
That could even be about himself, that he's
and
doing
it was.
This.
No, it certainly was. It
yeah.
certainly was.
And he has to, he knows how to watch and learn and respond to the unforeseen, discomplete, they call it unpredictable, statistical improbabilities attended there too. Like, bumping into Sting in the lobby and getting him to sing in the concert that night, just things like that.
Right.
I know he played in 70, around this time, he brought the whole football team, the Ottawa Rough Riders, I think they were called, out on stage because he bumped into them at the airport and got them to come to the concert.
Right.
See, he was trying to include everybody, which is what Dio Fa finally gets to do. It includes the whole globe.
Wow. That is brilliant. That is absolutely fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, hold on. Let me see what time it is here. God damn it, I gotta... Shit.
No, we've done a good performance here. This has been good.
Okay, let's cut it. Let's stop it here.
You know what? Ought to think about? If I actually keep getting millions of dollars, maybe we should do this ourselves, put on this whole thing.
Well, look, Bob, it's gonna end up being that way anyway.
Yeah.
You realize we are actually going to... But we are going to actually end up doing it ourselves.
I think so. So we'll keep this. We will keep this. We will not release this right now. What we just said, right? Or would you want to?
No, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah.
We're just getting.
He brought the whole football team, the Ottawa Rough Riders, I think they were called, out on stage because he bumped into them at the airport and got them to come to the concert.
Right.
See, he was trying to include everybody, which is what Dio Fa finally gets to do. It includes the whole globe.
Wow. That is brilliant. That is absolutely fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, hold on. Let me see what time it is here. God damn it. I got to... Shit.
No, we've done a good performance here. This has been good.
Okay, let's cut it. Let's stop it here.
You know what? Ought to think about? If I actually keep getting millions of dollars, maybe we should do this ourselves, put on this whole thing.
Well, look, Bob, it's gonna end up being that way anyway.
Yeah.
You realize we are actually going to, but we are going to actually end up doing it ourselves.
I think so. So we'll keep this. We will keep this. We will not release this right now. What we just said, right? Or would you want to?
No, not yet.
Yeah.
We're just getting started.
I think if I send you a copy, if you could send it to Tommy or a couple of these guys and say, hey, join in with us and talk.
Well, that's why I want to talk to a guy.
Yeah.
Talk to a guy. All right, hold on a second. Somebody's beeping. I think it's Denise. Hold on.
Okay. We're just taking a break here, waiting for Ike to come back, but this is the beginning of the symposium, leading to maybe a... Okay. Oh, we got an echo. If anybody's here.
All participants are now unmuted.
Wow. that's amazing. I've watched interviews of Frank Zappa, him doing it himself, talking about his life and everything, but nothing I've ever heard gives that kind of
the genius
insight.
Of Zappa.
And Bob, I don't know whether Zappa's emulating you, or you're emulating him in your life.
Well, all, you know, Carol's in Sistine Chapel. All great art is miming this moment when humans finally get what they're yearning for.
Huh.
You get that? So Zappa, being one of the last great artists before Ion shows up, has Ion all over him. So yes, they're all miming me and Carolyn.
maybe you'll
be a roadie or something. I don't know. Or you stay cool and you'll take over.
But you know what's really amazing? Now, I didn't know about Zappa until, what was it, about a year ago when Payday started, and you started telling me about it, and then I started, you know, listening and everything. Since that time, everybody that I've asked about, oh, do you know Frank Zappa and whatever, and, you know, there's a lot of people that know his music and that, but nobody really knows about Frank Zappa.
Right, that's right. Just like they don't know about us.
Yeah, they just thought his music was cool to listen to while they were stoned.
Yeah, and they heard a couple of hits here and there, or a couple of albums, and that's all. This thing, this is what's great. I'm educating the main band member for the last 10 years of the last period of Frank's life. I'm educating him about what Frank was doing with him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's amazing.
Yeah, and he sounds like a cool guy.
Yeah. And you're right, it's all miming. Frank is trying to mime Hand Signals for the Blind, which turns into the Android meme chart, which turns into Ion. You know, Frank, when he was in high school, you've heard this story probably, he liked his favorite composer, Vrez, had an album called Ionization. And he would play it for potential friends, and if they didn't like it, he wouldn't become a friend of theirs. So he had the word ionization in his life, and when he was 18, he was miming Ion.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty deep. Oh, you know what I will be giggling about for a long time is the tourists in the phone booth.
I was laughing,
that's like us when Ion comes on the phone. The tourists in the phone booth.
Good point. That's us in the phone. Have you got a castle up there?
I was really giggling through that, and I just kept thinking that was just perfect right after we were all doing that.
Yes, yeah. We were all talking to Ion. What are you doing there? Is that some kind of castle? So let's see if anybody else is here. If we got only a few people. Got Allison's number. Denny, Renee, to get Denny. So everybody left. Well, Matthew. Now, Matthew should be here. He has to be here, doesn't he? That was for Matthew. It was all for Matthew. Well, it's quarter to 8. That means it's quarter to 12. So, Matthew, did you go away, Matthew? Well, even Sue Bones left. Sue Bones says, good night, Bob and Carolyn. What a great surprise to have Brendan show up. You got some fun stories. Gotta sleep, gotta fly. Hope to tune back in when I get back to Toronto tomorrow. The Zappa Ike Willis dialogue about Frank's Global Theater is brilliant. Wow. And you notice at the end, it's up to me and Ike to do it now.
Yeah. So I what was the date of this interview?
July 14th.
Okay.
You know, four months ago, I guess. Yeah, four months ago. Look at what they're saying over in the commentary. Got some smart people over there. They're figuring it out. They realize it's amazing that Bob is leading the Zappa colleague on the details of a project Ike worked on. So then Icona Woman says, today's reality TV. Then she says, Project Runway. Then Leon says, thanks for sharing the recording, Bob. Thanks. Then Janet says, Bob is also a musicologist. Dog pop star man says, can you play Catholic Girls? Allison says, this is amazing, Bob. XO, always puts the XO in there. Then Janet says, I think he may be the world's most excellent expert on Zappa. Oh, that's true. I'm the most expert on all the holy offices that I have.
Nate Russell, McLuhan, Thompson, Coker, Garrett Dean, LaRouche, Nate Russell, Zappa.
Yeah, and it shows no time because Zappa was working on this and planning
right. It.
Well, it's still being worked on and planned.
And including like the pre-planning, and I was just explaining how the effects precede the causes in a recent thing I played.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was so funny because it's in this letter with this guy answering back who has not got a clue about what's going on.
The whole thing is a fiction. It's a circular. Zappa made a fiction. He had a fictional Warner Brothers executive listen to Frank's plea to promote the band a little more than they were doing. So the whole dialogue was written by Frank. It's invented.
Okay,
it's an invented dialogue.
That was a fiction. I was thinking it was like your callers that were supposed to, the stars that were supposed to be on the show.
That's right.
It was like that dialogue.
Yes, that's right. And you're right. It's as good. It's as good as real. It's real. What the guys would think. Frank knew what the salesmen were thinking. They didn't want to promote something they didn't understand.
Yeah.
So that was a fantastic thing. And even though I'm sort of not supposed to put it out there, I thought I'd embed it here in this 144 hours. I think you can hide here for a while. Right?
That's the part I was laughing about.
What?
When you're like, that was the part I was laughing about. I knew you weren't supposed to post it or put it out there.
Yeah.
And then you leave it in there. You know, on my recording, I must have gone somewhere because that went on twice at the end. Is that what it sounded like?
No. I forgot that it was being recorded. And I said, I want to hear that again. I want to rehear the idea. I sort of felt, I sort of lost attention. So I put it back. And then Carol says, you replayed it! And I'm just saying, well, what's the problem with that? And then it's, oh, shit, I'm fucking recording. But it didn't matter. It reemphasizes to you guys to re-listen, too, with me.
And it I thought I portaled.
Yeah.
And it sounded like there was whispering at that when you replayed that part that you replayed. I heard it the first time, and then I heard it again the second time. It sounded like there was some whispering or something.
His wife might have just come home. No, he's just on his phone. But somebody, a kid, someone in his family may have came up and said, where's the hot dog, you know? And he goes, oh, it's over there in the kitchen. You know what I mean? It's just family whispering.
Oh, I thought it was you and Carolyn.
No, I don't think so. Could have been, but I don't think so. Carolyn wouldn't interrupt me unless it was something. Well, it could have been. So it could be something important. So it's either his family or my family. All right, yeah, it's okay, either way. So wasn't that awesome, Allison?
Sorry, I was chewing something. Yes, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
You know, here's what the neat part was, that he may have said it there. He does say it a little bit. He may have said it after we stopped taping, but he said now all those little things that he would wonder about, he had no way of putting them together. Hearing this thing he didn't know about, put it all together for him his last 10 years with Frank about the stuff that he'd, you know, incompleted images.
Yeah.
It was like what I was telling Brendan. Brendan, what are images you have of Ford that you'll always remember? You know, little personal moments. Ike would have all kinds of little personal moments. Why is Frank charting that thing over there? Look, there's a chart over there. It's got the this and that. And Frank didn't explain it to him. Well, he now it all fit together with that dialogue.
It was like he was discovering parts of his life.
Yeah.
You know, patching it all back together in the future of now.
that's why Janet says, I think Bob is the world's most excellent expert on Zappa. I have to heal the band members.
So has he heard that recording, do you think?
Who?
What we just heard, I mean, I know he was in it, but it'll be interesting for him, I bet, to listen to that again.
I called him about a month ago. Yeah, it'll be interesting. I called him about a month ago, and I said, are we still not releasing that? And because I was thinking of playing with somebody, he said, yeah, don't release it. But the world has changed since then, and it had to be embedded in there. It's too great. It's Bob at its finest. as archaeologist. So Dave.
Well,
wants
he probably will do it.
Yeah, we'll probably do it. All right,
hey,
Neufeld.
Okay.
Let's have Neufeld's comments. Wasn't that amazing, Dave?
Yeah, I didn't hear all of it. I was tuning in and out, but I liked bits that I was hearing. And he was definitely dazzled by the patterns and insights.
Yes, that's
the clarity that you're giving to what he was involved in.
Yeah, he's like the guy. He's involved in the making of it, so he can't see the whole thing. He's inside it. I show up 30 years later with a detached view about it.
Hey, I just wanted to mention to remember yesterday we were mentioning a guy, Bernard Purdy, because Allison's on the line,
yeah.
And her son's a drummer.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't play on Barry White stuff, even though his groove reminds me a lot. But he does play on Isaac Hayes, so he could do that vibe for sure. But he's played on a lot of James Brown stuff. In fact, good stuff like Cold Sweat and I don't know, the list is long here anyways. But what are the other big? Nina Simone. Dizzy Gillespie, B.B. King, a lot of B.B. King records, Robert Palmer, Aretha Franklin, Herbie Mann, more James. Yeah, he plays Get on the Good Foot, which is a great record, and more Aretha Franklin, and Miles Davis, and B.B. Cat Stevens, Hall & Oates, Bette Midler, Joe Cocker. He's on a couple Joe Cocker, three Joe Cocker albums.
That's enough, Dave, for fuck's sake, Dave.
Well, you don't care about that shit.
Not right now. We are celebrating.
Oh, okay, did I interrupt? What?
Yeah, you're interrupting the celebration of me.
Oh, okay. Well, just leave that for Allison, just in case. Well, no, she doesn't. Well, her son, whatever, he'll look it up. Anyway,
Allison,
okay, sorry
Allison's
before
right
you
here,
for
Dave.
The interruption.
Allison's right here.
I know.
Well, Allison, what do you say?
Well, she's doing handstands right
muting.
Now.
Stop fucking muting.
I don't think you want to hear me chewing, and I'm going to eat. I know you chew on the air. What do I think? I thought it was...
Well, no, what
first
Dave,
of all, I loved hearing that,
we're talking
Dave,
about
though.
Dave. Okay, I bet you know... What did Dave wants your response? So is that what your response?
Oh no, I totally loved what Dave was reading. I was totally into it, and then all of a sudden you kiboshed him.
Yeah,
but yeah.
No, the main, Bob didn't want to hear it, but also it wasn't about him, and it's like, so it's hijacking his show for
Yeah, I mean, look,
about artists
guy,
that he has
guy,
that we're talking
about. You don't
have
to list a fucking whole career. He's a nobody. He's good for a little moment.
And Gil Scott Heron and the Rolling Stones and. Oh, you're going to hang up. Hang on. No.
Oh, you know what I think, though, is that muscle shows.
You fucking grass-stained brain, Dave. You can't stop
brain.
It.
I know you can't stop it. That's right. Fiddly inventories, lists, all
that. Yeah,
kind of
thing. Lists.
You know what? Ian said lists lead to reality. You start thinking and writing it out, and you know.
No, Dave.
It often worked for me in the past. I know it applied in the 80s, not now, but it used to.
The point was, I was showing the artist, Ike Willis, that Zappa was more than an artist.
That's true. And remember, I like that quote you said, one part I was tuned in where you said, yeah, what did you say? Our music is more than just, what was it, sound?
What our music is not what our music is.
Or what our music is not what our music is, yeah. So.
Yes.
What you're hearing is just, you're hearing more than just what you're hearing.
See, the ionic statement.
Also what you're hearing also encapsulates so much more than just the sounds going through the air.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Who was that interviewer? What was that interview in?
What do you mean? Ike?
No, the reading, when you were reading. The last part about
that is a made-up circular that Frank made for Warner Brothers. They were paying no attention to his band and not promoting him, so he made up a fake conversation between a Warner Brothers executive and himself. It's a fake conversation,
right.
It's fiction, but it's actually the way they would think. It's a great creation.
That'll be part of your curriculum for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, who is that guy that was on the phone with us when Jesse was on, you were on?
Mark.
And Mark. The 1956 Mark.
Yes.
Yes.
The drummer.
Okay.
And he was there tonight, and he was making comments. He was going nuts. As he said, that was the greatest music you ever heard.
Which was?
Stairway to Heaven.
Bernard Purdy? The Stairway to Heaven. Oh, tonight,
Bernard
dude, everyone's
Purdy,
having an orgy. You wouldn't believe it.
Oh, Purdy. That guy's just in the AM.
Oh, he's minor. I know. Sorry. I forgot. Of course. No, dude. Of course.
He's fucking minor.
I thought you were referring to lesser people just to give some equal time. Okay, hang on.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Fair enough. I agree. No, dude, that part, that's why I was, oh, man, you should see the comment section was going wide. People are literally saying, this is like, well, one girl's going, Ascension. No, she's almost like, hey, no.
Yeah, Ascension.
It's so fun, though. They're just pouring in, man. It was the greatest moment. Everyone was feeling it. And to the phrase,
yeah.
That was a Church of the Slack moment, even though it's not officially the Church of the Slack.
Right.
That was a real church moment.
That's right. That's why I said, don't you think, Brendan, that was sacred?
Truly.
When we stop.
Well, I'm not Brendan, but yeah, I'll fucking claim it.
Brendan agrees.
I'll speak.
Look, here's Mark.
Oh, I missed that.
Mark's comments are, as it's building up, Mark says, he goes, not working. My studio madness is not working. Mark's brothers, relax now. Fuck me. Okay? So then Allison says, hit the panic button. And then Dave says, just talk to Brendan, stop pushing with this stuff. Mark says, Bob, allow and relax. Econowoman, well, we are on computer. Norma, it's the Zappa vibe that stutters. Ronan, panic button already christened Allison. Ronan says, nice. Econowoman, ha ha ha, this is when I'm trying to stop.
The energy's heating up, too, and you're just being archetypal Bob. It's not even cliche.
Right.
It's gone into archetypal status.
Right. So
it is archetypal,
hey,
as you're doing. Sorry,
Dave,
shut up.
Too much. Come on.
Sorry,
Mark,
buddy. I'm up late.
Shut up. You're even explaining how you're going to shut up. So listen, Mark goes, where you want Noble Mark. Mark goes, God, this is funny. 10! Then Dog Pop Star Man says, Wonder Showman. A Kano woman says, I can't stop laughing. Dog Pop Star Man says, No, Wonder Shows Then. Mark says, I am dying. Lofty, this is International Connection. That's Steve Reimer up in Toronto. He thinks it's International Connection with Greg Duffel. And Wheel says, ha ha ha, a Kano woman. And I was going to go watch Project Runway. Damn. Mark says, yes, we are fucked. Ronan, that's actually creation right there. Zappa with Bob voiceover. Econowoman, now don't forget 2R2 and Lofty are in the house. Mark says 2 Bill 2 = 2. No, 7 Bill. That was 7:22. That was the time. 7 Bill 2 = 2. We are perfect. Then Dave Neufeld says, Bob doesn't build houses without carefully measured foundations. New Rose, what a trip. Mark just says F-U-C-K as he collapses in his orgasm. Econowoman says, with his own math, he made up himself, the new math. Ronan, if Bob built a house, it would be by accident while trying to wash dishes. New Rose, can't wait to see what it's like 3 days from now.
See,
Allison, what?
It's an orgy as you're, look at the time, this is all within a few seconds.
That's right. And Allison goes, one of Bob's best bits yet. Hilarious, complete with a panic button noise. I bet he's doing his air guitar. Ronan, and don't take that wrong. It's pure genius as a technique. Econowoman. And the music transitions perfectly to the writing of New Rose's words. So there's the timing synchronizing, Dave, you noticed.
Yes.
Day 9, says Econowoman. Ronan, Bill just got up off the floor. He was using his pillow pet. Econowoman, day 12. Econowoman, Ascension. Ronan, EW, Econowoman, remember, no time, so day 2. Back to day 2. Then Janet says, this is the best rock concert ever. I think we'll end with that. There's more, but that's a good one.
No, it keeps going. Look, no, don't, dude, don't, look, they're,
yeah,
the
so
band before
says, oh,
it,
yeah.
Don't deny them.
That's right. So Econowoman says, oh, yeah, before the first chapter of Genesis. Wheels, now that's the climax. Then Lofty says, Zappa Quickie, and remember, I refuted that instead of
yeah, that,
a Zappa
Longie. Yeah, that's great confusion, or maybe, no, Zappa Quickie, quick sex. You think about it, that was 1 minute with a massive orgy involving a lot of people.
That's right. Ronan, Genesee, right before the end. That's the Genesis. That's the way Ian says Genesis, Genesee. Norma, someone said Bill Someone send Bill Jermaine's sister's butt pillow. Lofty, short clip. Dave, Bob, read the clips as you're air guitaring, which is what I'm doing now, right? I'm just what you want me to do. And fucking 2 hours later. Ronan.
Replay.
Dave wants to take over and have Bob read the clips before they're even typed.